Since we're going to talk a little bit about programming today anyway, when you do printf, %f, %f, / n, x and y, what comes to your screen? What comes to your screen is something like 72.76, 59.38126, 1.7917, minus 3 point, right?
Yes.
Right? What are those numbers?
ASCII.
Why?
Because they're not binary.
They're not binary. How many bytes per value does this take?
One byte?
How could it be one byte? Yeah. One byte can only cover 256 possible values.
Wait, so you're saying one digit? One digit would be.
No, I'm saying this number here. How many bytes does it take?
That would take 8, 4. Are we using a mantissa?
What does it mean that that's ASCII? They're all characters. How many bytes does a character take?
2, 1, 2, 3.
We're not writing in Japanese or Chinese here. We're talking English, okay? This is a you know, it's an 8-bit font and all that stuff.
Aren't the ASCII codes
how many characters are here?
5.
How many bytes does it take?
10. 5.
How many characters are here?
7. 8.
How many bytes does it take?
8.
How many bytes are here?
6.
So 6 bytes, right?
Yes.
Is this an efficient representation of these numbers? Why?
Because you only have 10 different numbers, or 11 different things you could be displaying with those. When you have, so 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, period. You know, you don't need a whole byte to represent.
This took 5 bytes, right? This took, what was it, 8 bytes. This took 6 bytes. This took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 bytes. That's a total of 11 plus 14, 25 bytes. If I wrote that as binary data, how many bytes would it take?
More. Well, could you even...
How many bytes would it take to write this as a 32-bit floating-point number? If I did fwrite, you know, the value... whatever the arguments are, size of float, and so forth.
You said 32 bits. So.
I said 32 bits. How many bytes?
4.
So if I write these as 32-bit floats, this would take 4. Four plus four plus four plus four, which is 16 bytes.
But if we define it as a double or a float, I mean...
If I wrote this as 64-bit floats or doubles, how much would it take?
32
bytes. So this is a better representation than doing this as ASCII. ASCII is very inefficient. So often when we write, if you have to write things as ASCII, we pump it through a compression program like GTAR, GZIP or something to compress the bits. So if you pump this through a compression program, you may get it down below, you will certainly get it down below 25 bits. Or 25 bytes. But the reason we write binary is because that's the exact representation that's on the computer. These are not the exact representations of these numbers. This is an approximation based on the format statement. You must understand that in this course. This, if these were declared as floats, this is going to give you the exact byte values that were used to represent that number. There's no loss of information. This introduces error.
But if so, if we declare them as floats, you're saying that the printf statement is, when does the ASCII get involved? Because we declare it as float, if the data is float.
If I declare it as floats, what happens at this point? To represent this number, right? And it's that number is represented in IEEE floating point standard format. I hope we understand that. We talked about that this semester. If I do this, I think I got that right. What happens? This is my poor ampersand. I can't draw ampersands.
You're saying it, I was asking.
No.
Oh.
This is ampersand, address.
So it's still a float, right?
What's it doing? Come on, Elliot, you've been through this.
It writes the contents of what's at X to...
It goes to the memory location where X is, and it writes four characters, four bytes, which happens to be the exact representation of that number. Those are the actual four bytes. So if you write that to a file and read that to a file, you get exactly what that number was. Okay? Now, what if I do printf? What do I get? I get something like this. Is that the exact representation of this number?
No.
No. With this printf, I could have done %10.4f, I could have done %15.6e, all different formats, and I'm going to get all different things. This is a character representation of this number. It's just printing ASCII characters. This is why we use binary, when we want to actually recover the data, save the data exactly in its, you know, the true value of the data. You still aren't convinced.
You're making sense, but... When you say we use binary to save the data, what is that process?
Okay, if you have an audio file, you record an audio file into memory, and you write it as ASCII values, what's wrong with that? Why do things like MP3 exist?
It's an efficient...
Why do things like JPEGs and GIFs exist?
Because they compress the data.
GIF doesn't compress the data. Well, yes, it does compress the data. But so when you sit in MATLAB and you generate a vector of data and you write it to a file, if you write that as ASCII, what's going to happen? And then you read that back as ASCII. The data is going
to
use a lot more memory on disk, a lot more space on disk, and there's going to be a loss of precision. The data you read back, the signal you read back, will not be the same as what you wrote. Well, imagine if that's your MP3 player. I think you'd get pretty upset if what you're playing is not what was recorded. The artist would get really upset because what you're listening to is not what they intended to be recorded.
Yeah.
what you're listening to is a noisy version of what was recorded. When we use binary formats, we preserve the data exactly. When we introduce formats like GIFs, we compress the data, but it's lossless compression, meaning there's no loss of information, no noise is introduced. When we use something like JPEG, what happens? Your cameras store images as JPEG, and you accept that. What's happened when your camera takes its 12 megapixel imager and writes a 500K JPEG file? No, it's still sort of. It's still stored. Let's say your camera is, what are the 12 megapixels? They're like 4,000 by, 4,000 by 3,000 or something like that, pixels, right? When you write that as a JPEG, the file still claims to have a resolution of 4,000 by 3,000, right? What's happened? That's one of the reasons why you're in this class, so you'll hopefully understand all this stuff by the end of the semester.
Does the information, the pixels, are they like lost?
Is it compressing the data when it writes a JPEG?
Yeah.
Yes. Is it losing information? Yes. Is it simply writing RGB values for those 12 million pixels? No. It's using a fancy compression algorithm. We'll maybe by the end of the semester go through a little bit of what's in JPEG. The image processing class really deals with that more. We'll talk a little bit more about audio and that kind of stuff in this class. So JPEG is a lossy compression scheme, meaning that you spend all this money on this really high-resolution imager from your camera, and then you write compressed files to your memory. Now, why do they do that? Right. I bought the little camera I have. You get like 6 pictures if you keep it at full resolution. You get like 150 or 200 or 300 pictures if you use compression. 6 pictures doesn't go very far. So why do they use why do they use MP3? Because that over the years evolved to become the standard in terms of audio compression. What's the typical size of an MP3 file for a, like a 4-minute audio?
Two
megabytes. 5 to 600 what? Yeah, I got, everyone needs their guilty pleasures. What are the sizes of these files?
That was 2.5 megabytes.
4-minute songs tend to run about 5 megabytes. 4 to 5 minute songs run about 5 megabytes. How much would it take to store that in an uncompressed format? So we were doing calculation over here earlier. How would you calculate that? That was an exam problem, essentially. 5 minutes, that 5-minute song, how would you calculate how much space you need? Five minutes times 60 seconds times 44,000 times 2. That's the number of bytes. And that's going to be, I think someone said 40. It's probably in that range. That sounds reasonable. You get like a factor of 10 out of MP3 compression. This is a lossy... This is a distorted version of what was recorded. Purists are not happy about that. That's why this whole vinyl, analog vinyl versus digital audio exists. They're still fighting about this 40 years later. Yes?
So, when I came into class, I asked you about, I wanted to plot data from my C program, and I was asking about nuplot.
Right.
And then you started talking about ASCII figures.
All these different tools.
Yeah. So I'm kind of confused why you brought the ASCII, because I was going to just...
I asked you, what did you have? I think what you have is this kind of an output, right?
Well, no, because I have initialized those variables as... doubles. I'll change them to floats now, but and then I was just going to pipe it into nuplot if that's possible. So there wouldn't be any. I don't know.
But
how
what are you piping into nuplot? You're piping an F write to standard out, or you're piping a printf. That's my point.
Okay. Yeah. So that the F.
I want to make sure people understand this. There's nothing magical about pipes. They just connect you to the next program. That's why it's called a pipe.
Well, actually, it's fprintf. So.
Okay, fprintf. Is that a formatted print or is that a binary write? And we're not picking on you. I'm glad you're asking these questions because every one of these guys has that question, trust me. What does this do? This is specifically what you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. What does this do? Is that an ASCII write or a binary write?
Well, what's the difference between fprintf and printf? Because I've never used fprintf before.
Okay, what's the difference between printf and fprintf? What's the difference between those two statements? Right. You can. Printf is just a. It actually calls fprintf. It just calls fprintf with standard out as the argument. Fprintf is the low level routine. Printf just calls fprintf with standard out. I like to use fprintf because you can then easily change your code to, rather than writing from standard to standard out, you can make it write to a file pointer, fp. Yes, but what are you storing in that file?
Non-binary.
Non-binary, which is?
ASCII.
Non-binary can mean a lot of things, actually.
Okay.
This is ASCII, right? So if you want to plot ASCII data in Unix or, you know, really anywhere, what are you going to do? No, how are you going to plot it? What tool are you going to use?
That was my question.
And we're finally going to get to the answer today. If I give you a file with, you know, ASCII numbers, X and Y, what are you going to do to plot it?
There's a lot of options.
There's nuplot, there's GNUplot, there's, why not Excel? There's something called GNUplot, yeah.
How's that spelled?
GNU.
Is that
okay? Okay. Well, there's all. I think there actually is something called NuPlot, and there's thousands of plotting programs out there. You can also import it into Excel. I do a lot of plotting in Excel because I kind of like the flexibility. You can plot it in MATLAB. You can suck that file into MATLAB and plot it. I would hope everyone in this room knows how to import an ASCII file into MATLAB. You could plot it in Python if you took software tools, right?
But we don't want to print. If we don't want to have ASCII values, so then what do we?
Now, what if you write? What if you do fwrite?
So
what if instead of doing this fprintf? Now, this would have been the quiz question for this. What if you do f right? Your argument, your pointer, your size, the number of items, and standard out for your file pointer. What happens? What is this command going to do? Be very specific.
It is going to send the data in binary format to standard out.
What data?
Whatever data you want.
4 bytes, right? It's going to plot four. It's going to send 4 bytes to standard out. If you try to look at that on your terminal window, what's going to happen? What's going to happen when I do this? This is a binary file, right? I'm going to get junk. Just random bytes. Bit by bit, that's the MP3 format. And I could write a program that decodes that format, but in terms of viewing this on your terminal window, it's just random bytes. It's a binary file. So if I write the data as binary to standard out or to a file, I could redirect standard out to a file. Now I have this binary signal data in a file, right? Like samples. How am I going to plot that?
You have to tell the plotting where to start, how to read that piece by piece.
So I have a binary file that has 16-bit integers, sequences of 16-bit integers in it, 2 bytes per sample. What we often call a raw data file.
Do the octal dump thing, and then pipe that into?
I would import it using Audacity. And when I import a binary file and I tell it what the sample rate is, it will display it nicely as a binary, as a signal. You could also write a MATLAB program. In fact, MATLAB will import raw binary files. Yeah, again, you have to tell it the sample frequency, the number of bits per sample, and it will suck all that up into a vector for you, and then you can plot that vector in MATLAB. From the looks I'm seeing, none of you have ever imported a binary sample data file into MATLAB. So we're going to make that a homework assignment. And we're going to make that a time-limited homework assignment, since you're all supposed to be MATLAB gurus. So how many hours before I can get a solution to that from each of you? You pick your poison. How many hours from the end of this class? This is like, remember that TV show 24 where the clock running?
Oh, God. Well, what if someone has some like another commitment after this class? So.
I'm saying, okay, make more hours. Pick a number. What would you tell your boss if this was your first job and your boss asked you to do this? You certainly wouldn't tell him
0.5 hours.
Yeah, you wouldn't tell him what, him or her, like, you know, 67 hours. So how many hours from the end of this class? I'm serious. This is a homework assignment.
Okay, when do you need it by?
I'm up a lot more than you guys, apparently. So I'll start grading them as they come in. And I'm usually up at 5 tomorrow morning, so. The task is, I want you to, you've got a program now that should be generating a binary file, right? One of these homework, computer homework assignments. So I want you to take that binary file and plot it in MATLAB. Import it into MATLAB and plot it. You can Google this. Come on, this isn't going to be rocket science. How many hours before I have a solution? This may be the most useful homework assignment we do this semester. I want you to commit. This is like one of these simple tasks. I want you to commit to a particular amount of time it takes you to get me this answer as your boss.
Can we have different commitment times?
I'll take the maximum of the reasonable numbers. This could have been done in the time I'm waiting here trying to get this number, you realize. <laughs> 24 hours?
No, 6 hours. He's going to take the max.
You're thinking more?
6 hours.
24 hours. Okay?
That's too much.
I know it's too much, but I'm trying to be a nice guy here. 24 hours. You show me a nice, you know, nice plot of your signal. I'll give you, let's say, 25 points on the first exam. That's pretty generous. I'll give you another 25 points if you can take the same file and import it into Audacity and show me that the plot you're getting in whatever tool you're using matches what Audacity shows. Because then you're going to do a little DSP. You're going to have to tell it what the sample frequency is. Big, big problem there, right?
Can you get over 100 on each exam?
Yes. And you can use those points on the next exam.
This is great.
But as some of the students who've been in my classes will tell you, you never seem to get ahead, right, Ellie? Even though I give out all this massive amounts of extra credit. I just add it all up. So yeah, you can get over 100. So 25 points for the MATLAB and 25 points for the Audacity. And I think the rework was also worth 25 points. So you can pick up 75 easy points. So both the Audacity and MATLAB within 24 hours of the end of this class. So nominally like 8:30 tomorrow night. In my email. You send me an email with... Yeah, just send me an email with the picture. Send me the email with a JPEG picture demonstrating. You don't have to write a document or anything, but just send me like JPEG showing me the plots.
You want to see the code?
Nope.
No. And it just needs to be, we generate a raw file.
Yeah, like you could use the sine waves or you could use audio, whatever you know you're doing in your program currently. People are at different stages of that, but. Just kind of tell me what the audio, what you know, what it, if it's sine waves or if it's an audio signal. Don't send me some plot that's like a black bar across the screen. I mean, you know, make it something like what you'd see in a textbook. A nice waveform kind of looks good. This isn't hard, but you should know how to do it. If you Google the MATLAB stuff, you'll find it. You'll find Stack Exchange, all sorts of great solutions for it. So any other questions on this ASCII binary stuff? You know, I realize, you know, I understand you guys struggle with this, and one of the things I want to accomplish in this class, that make sure, at the very least, you understand some basics about bits and bytes as it relates to signal processing.
I'm sorry, could you repeat one more time what you expect for 24 hours?
I want you start with a with a known signal like sine waves.
Okay.
Those of you who've taken signals with me know I talk a lot about this. When you're writing code, you have to debug it. And the only way you debug it ultimately is by applying known test signals like sine waves. So I do a lot of my algorithm stuff. After I think the code is debugged, I'll start pumping sine waves through it. And why do we do that? Because usually you can calculate the answers you should get for simple signals like sine waves and white noise and things like that. So start with a signal that you know, like an audio file or some sine waves like you're doing in one of the homework assignments. And then send me a plot of that signal that was generated in MATLAB.
That's it?
Yeah. And, you know, show me, in the when you take the screenshot, show that it came from MATLAB. So I know you're not cheating. I mean, not a big deal, but just take a screenshot of your MATLAB window. So that the point of that exercise is you're learning how to import binary data, raw, what we call raw binary data, which is the most basic form of DSP. It's what we call linear samples, right? These are 16-bit samples of the data. And so make sure the audio file is 16 bits per sample, short integers, like you're doing in the homework assignments.
So a float?
No, 16 bit short integers.
Oh.
Not a float. I want to make sure you understand what that means. So you're learning how to import 16 bit raw data into MATLAB. That's worth 25 points to me that you know how to do that. But now the second question is what you're getting correct? Well, you need another tool to verify that. So for another 25 points, you can suck it into Audacity. I really like Audacity. In fact, I just learned some cool stuff in Audacity this week. I'm really happy. I can show you some. But Audacity is this great tool. It has a lot of different features. Got a lot of DSP built into it. And it can import raw files, and then you can listen to them and plot them and cut and edit them and all this cool stuff. So you should be familiar with a program like Audacity. And if you don't have Audacity, you're going to have to work a little harder for your 25 points. It takes like 2 minutes to download Audacity and install it. Yes?
So what if the signal has, it's non-integer signal?
Non-integer signal.
Decimal.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. That's a good question. It's funny, last semester when I taught this class on this, we got to this sort of this point in the course, and I did a similar review because all these questions kind of were building up and students were afraid to ask them and all that. But this actually, the last lecture tonight is going to deal with, or the second lecture is going to deal with hardware issues. So now you have a problem that you're writing numbers like, let's say we write the time, 3.761, and the value, 27.9312. And then you write the next time, 4.638, and you write the corresponding value, minus 35.690. 1, 2. These, we said, are ASCII. How would you write these to a 16-bit binary data file?
F-write?
Well, yes, you're going to use F-write. But you want to write these as 16-bit integers. So you have a problem, right? What? Okay, we'll hold that thought. 16-bit integers. Tell me about 16. What are 16-bit integers in C? What kind of numbers can we represent with 16-bit integers? When I do short int, I... Will that work?
It won't be the number you think it is.
Why?
Because it'll be the modular version of whatever it is.
Why?
Because it doesn't have enough. It'll overflow until the point where it doesn't overflow anymore, and what's left over will be what you see.
Okay, so what is the range of I? We went through this semester. It's a 16. This is a 16-bit integer. What? Is it signed or unsigned? Short int is unsigned? Oh my God, you guys are depressing me here. That's okay. Time to review. What is the range of a short integer? It's a signed 16-bit number. Somewhere Dr. Helfferty is being peeled off the roof. And Higgins is going to hear about this when I get done with class tonight. It's 16 bits. What if it was 8 bits? What if it was 1 bit? What if it was 4 bits? Let's start with something simple that we can do by hand. How many numbers can you represent with 4 bits? 16, 2 to the 4, right? So what types of numbers can you represent? Either I can go plus minus or 0 to 2 to the 4, right? 2 to the 4, 0 to 2 to the 4 minus 1, technically. So, if I have an 8-bit number, what range can I represent? If I declare an unsigned char, what range is that going to have? 0 to 255, very good. If I do a char or a signed char, what will its range be? Something like that. I can't ever remember if it's... I think that's correct, actually. But it could be minus 128 to 127. But it's essentially plus minus 127 plus one number. What if it's 16-bit? And I do short int. Isn't it like that? Something like that. It could be minus 32,767. And what if I do a unsigned It's going to be 0 to 65535, which is 2 to the 16th minus 1, right? Is everyone clear on that? That's where all this kind of begins. Now, let's come back to our problem. How am I going to represent this number if I'm going to be writing short ints to a binary file? I could do anything I want. I could take each ASCII character and write it as a short int. But what are we going to do? What we're going to do, well, one option is I could do this, right? And what value is I going to take? Negative 35. Is that a good way to write this data? Why? You lose precision. In fact, in MATLAB, they like to scale audio files between plus minus 1. So if you go through and assign all those samples to 16-bit integers, you're going to get zeros. So what we would normally do, if we would take our signal and kind of normalize it to a range of minus 32767 to plus 32767. And when we work in DSP and fixed point arithmetic, that's precisely what we do. Everything is scaled up so that we use all 16 bits of precision. So filter coefficients, and I'll talk about this a little bit later tonight, they don't actually exist as these numbers. We're going to multiply this by 32767 and round it so that we can represent it as best as possible as a 16-bit number. And we're going to do all of our multiply adds as 16-bit multiplies. And they're going to flow into a 32-bit accumulator, so we don't lose precision. And then we're going to have to check for overflow, because you can overflow a 32-bit accumulator if you're doing something like a digital filter in fixed-point arithmetic.
Wait, so you multiply that number by 32767, and then...
So if you're going to be using 16-bit data, you want to make sure your signals are scaled so that they use as much of that range as possible. Because we studied quantization in this course, and we learned that the more quantization bits you have, the better the signal-to-noise ratio. So if you have a 16-bit number, but all your numbers are only ranging from minus 35 to plus 35, you're not using most of that 16-bit range. So there's things we could do, like we could take the maximum value of the signal and scale by that, so that the maximum value of the signal is exactly 16 bits. Sometimes you see people do that. They'll take a signal, they'll take the maximum value, they'll scale all the amplitudes by the maximum value, divide by it, and then multiply by 32767. Right, so what we'll do instead is I'll kind of write some pseudocode here. We'll find the maximum in the signal. And let's call that the value max. Then we'll write a loop. And we'll do short int isum is equal to your signal value divided by max times 32767. And we'll actually often call the round, something like a round function. This is really inefficient, but this is sort of the way we do it in C. So you'll divide the signal by its maximum value, scale it to 32767, and then round it. And just to be safe, sometimes we'll do things like we'll actually do something like this. We'll do float sum is equal to round of x of I divided by max. And I sure hope you're going to do a pound define for that. If I see those kinds of constants in your code, you're going to hear from me. And then we may do something like a max function. We'll do if sum is greater than 32767, sum equals 32767. Else, if sum is less than minus 32767, sum equals minus 32767. Then we'll do isum, short in isum is equal to sum, and then we'll do fwrite on isum. right? MATLAB abstracts a lot of this kind of stuff from you, but you don't. Most of you don't really know what, have a clue what MATLAB's doing underneath. This is what we. This is what we've been doing it for years in signal processing for this kind of stuff. This, of course, would be replaced by a what we call a limiter function. So, questions. Now, why is this? No questions? Because I've got lots of questions about this. YouTube got in a whole slew of trouble over this. Not YouTube. U2, the band U2. So you're thinking, what the hell is he talking about? How could this relate to U2? Well, this relates to U2. What's wrong with this? What's wrong with doing this across your entire MP3 collection? Who's adjusted gain on their MP3? First of all, who's complained about? I guess we'll might as well use the rest of class for this. This is actually a nice little DSP anecdote. So, who's complained about their MP3 files not all being the same loudness? Big time problem, right? It really sucks. So you use a program like MP3 Gain to equalize them. At least I do. What's the problem with running that program from time to time? A program like that. It reports an error. What kind of an error does it report? It reports an error that your signal's exceeding the maximum value allowed. You're boosting the volume to the point where the signal is overflowing the number of bits they've allocated for the samples. The signal's becoming greater than 32767. If you do this for every song in your collection, you're guaranteeing that each song has a maximum amplitude of 32767, right? Or minus 32767. Now, why is the artist going to get upset with that? Why? So you're adjusting the volume on the song when they prepared that song for you and wanted it to play at a particular volume. So the song you're listening to is not exactly what the artist delivered. And now you start copying that and sending it to all your friends, and before you know it, that artist's intellectual property has now been violated. Now, how did you two get in trouble with this? Well, it turns out people notice music more when you play it at louder levels on the radio. And all the music you listen to on the radio has some kind of amplitude compression applied to it to make it sound louder than it should be. And U2 was one of these bands, very kind of idealistic pure band, that was raving about how terrible this is. But it turns out they caught U2 doing the same thing. Now, I think in their defense, it actually was somebody they didn't know was they had delivered the music to somebody, and that person went ahead and did what they do to all music. But U2 was very vocal about how this was, you know, terrible, you're violating artists, and we would never do that. And it turns out they were doing that, and they got in a whole slew of trouble over this because their songs were being compressed. They don't do this as across the whole file. They actually do this on a segment by segment basis. So the loudness of that music that you were hearing on the radio was not what U2 intended that song to sound like. The same thing happens when you flip channels on cable TV. We've all done it. You got to grab that volume control really quickly because you jump to some station, it's like three times as loud as the previous station. It's the same problem. They also play commercials on TV louder than programming because you tend to notice them more and advertisers like to sell more stuff. All that is this kind of game being played. So the reason this is bad is because you're going to go through your MP3 collection and alter the relative volumes of those pieces of music. That could be a disaster. Maybe the artist wanted that music to sound slightly softer than another piece of music they prepared, if you're talking about an album or something. But in DSP, we can, you know, we can rescale things all the time, and we do it all the time. So these questions you're asking are, they're not trivial, actually. There's a lot of issues that go into these questions about how you display things, how you play them, how you plot them. We can always scale up and down and all that, and it influences the amount of noise we add into the signal. And MATLAB's famous for this because MATLAB likes to auto-scale things to plus minus one when you use some of their wonderful import functions. And most of the students, unfortunately, never ask what it's actually doing, but it turns out it's doing some auto-scaling, and that's not right.
Are we going to continue to talk about this after the break?
What else? What more is there to talk about? No, I mean, if there's more questions, I'll spend all night on this if we want to.
You mean, I thought you meant what else we would talk about besides this.
No, I mean, I wanted to talk about digital filter realizations tonight, and I wanted to talk a little bit about how we implement digital filters in actual DSP chips. And at some point, we were going to talk about representing filter coefficients in fixed point numbers.
I can just ask you a question about it after class.
But if we want to continue, I mean, if there's other questions on this kind of stuff, and we're going to actually look at some C code tonight too, because I feel like people are really struggling with C programming. But if there's more questions about this, we can continue this after the break. It's just up to you. I think at some point you just have to start doing it. I can lecture all night about these things, but until you deal with these in your programs, you're not going to learn any of this stuff. Programming, you just have to struggle and then solve problems, and it's in that process of solving problems is when you learn how to program. You can do whatever you want in MATLAB.
Okay.
I hate MATLAB. I don't care what you do in MATLAB. Just bring me the plot.
Because you said you want us to import it, but
yeah.
It's not like we're using MATLAB on Linux.
What? You're not using MATLAB on Linux? You can use MATLAB on whatever platform you want.
Really?
Yes. That would be a whole other interesting course, is do you get the same numbers in MATLAB on Linux that you get on Windows? You'd be surprised. The same MATLAB code running on two different machines, does it produce identical results? And if it doesn't, why not, and is that a problem? There's a lot of, you know, unfortunately you guys live in an age where everything is abstracted. And you never see the details anymore, but there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, good and bad. So it's important in this course to me that you learn something about the details, because that's really what DSP is. We're down at the low level dealing with the bits and bytes and things like that.
In the round function, is that zero? Is that a second input argument, or is that 0.0?
Here?
Yeah.
This is multiplying. This is taking x, dividing by max, and multiplying by 3276.
No. In round, I'm saying times 32767.0.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Oh, I just thought maybe it was actually counting.
This is all floating point, so I would if I were writing this, I would do 0.0. What I actually do though would pound define that. You should never bury constants like that in your code. You pound define it at the top of your file with some nice name like 2 to the 16th or something like that. Or scale factor or all right, so let's take a break and we can figure out what we'll do next.